Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
The COVID-19 inquiry officially begins its first day of evidence today, 2 years after then Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced a public inquiry will be set up. Chairwoman Baroness Heather Hallett will formally open the first substantive hearing. Britain's unemployment rate has fallen as the number of people in work hit a new record high. The Office for National Statistics shows the figures are now past pre-pandemic level for the first time. A Labour MP's accused the Foreign Secretary of being a Chinese stooge over a possible trip to the country after his ministerial colleague was sanctioned by Beijing. James Cleverly asked Chris Bryant to withdraw the comments. Mr. Cleverly then went on the attack.
The idea that a Foreign Secretary interacting with another government is anything other than my duty and responsibility is nonsense. This is literally my job. Doesn't mean I agree with them, and indeed, I have highlighted the sanctioning of British parliamentarians in every single interaction.
And former US President Donald Trump is due to appear at a federal court today on dozens of charges. From Radio News Hub, I'm Andy Hoyle.
At Lidl, we're big on a British summer. And what could be more British than adding a little class to sitting on the grass? With rosé Prosecco for £7.49, deluxe antipasti platters for £2.49, and tucking into a GHI-approved deluxe quiche for only £2.69. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Subject to availability, selected stores excludes NI.
Coming up, Africa in Focus.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus.
Africa in Focus is sponsored by Dermadew Lotion. Visit dermashark.co.uk.
Colorful
Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or even good evening, depending on the time zone that you are connecting to us from. Welcome to Africa in Focus, and I'm your host, Julius Mbaluto. Of course, we are coming to you all the way from the heart of London to wherever you are on Colorful Radio. So join us again. But today's topic, very provocative, very interesting. We just want to say Africa, great continent of Africa, has been through many journeys. This word Africa, coined in the Western Hemisphere somewhere in Europe during the Berlin Conference and the boundaries divided, all that, we have a situation whereby we ended up with countries those boundaries, sometimes they separated the same people, threw them into what they call different countries. But now, the boundaries, and then you have the slavery, and then you have the colonization. So how has this journey been? You see, they brought the word democracy. We thought that would be a cure for all the problems that be there for Africa. Democracy, wonderful word. And also the essence of it, rule of the people, for the people, and by the people. That actually is the most amazing thing. But, and I say but, or if only it was to be the case. Has it been the case? That's where we are here today, to explore the essence of democracy in Africa. Question is democracy in Africa dissipating? Is it increasing? Is it decreasing? All these different position points. Is there a democracy in Africa anyway? Or is just autocracy sanitized at the front? We will never tell. So I know it's a contested viewpoint, but we have very different viewpoints when it comes to democracy in Africa. Of course, to explore this further, talk about it more, I'm joined by Priscilla Wepo. She's a broadcaster. She's a broadcaster. Great African. She is very much aware of the happenings on the ground, on the continent. And that's why I like talking to her, because yes, we'll get somewhere. We'll get somewhere. Well, Priscilla, welcome to the program. And say hello to our listeners.
Good day, Julius. Thank you so much for having me. It's always, always a pleasure to be here. And good day to everybody, wherever you may be in the world.
Yes, Priscilla, our talk today about democracy. I mean, what's your take on it? When you observe what's going on in Africa, I mean, I don't want to talk for you. I know what I think. Sometimes what not to think either as well.
Well, you know, I often hear people saying that democracy has failed in Africa. And I disagree. I don't agree that democracy has failed in Africa. You know, you used a word earlier when you were speaking. You mentioned autocracy. And I think that for the most part, that is what we have experienced in Africa. And there are reasons for that. You also made mention of the fact that, you know, in the 1800s, when the Europeans were dividing up Africa, that they, you know, divided a country into two, for instance, and separated the people and put them in different countries. And sometimes they put different groups within one country, and so on and so forth. And we've seen that going on. And so that's for challenges. But I think that there has been, over the years, from the 1800s right up to date, a number of factors that has not permitted for democracy to work in Africa. So when we make the statement, democracy doesn't work in Africa, it's a generalization, and it's a statement that we make to, and not taking into account the very real experience of Africa, which the West will say that is their foreign policy. The banks, for instance, because we have to look at this from leadership, financial, the people, and so on. So if we look at for the development of any country, their finance is necessary, leadership is necessary, their people are necessary. So let's start with Africa. So in our generation, let's just take it from, say, you know, going back 100 years, we have seen, or as we, you and I, have lived through, we've seen successive coups. Africa has been marred by coup after coup after coup in various countries, military rule here, there, and everywhere. We have been seeing that, you know, one after the other. Now, in our younger days, yours and mine, when our governments will go to the said World Bank for loans, they will be given a set of conditions, instructions, as to how they can use the loan. How is it that you go to an institution because you need help and you want to do certain things? But then the institution says, oh yes, of course, I will help you, but the money I give you, you have to use it for what I say. But you have to pay it back to me. But then the things that the institution is requiring of Africa or the various African countries are not developmental tools, are not infrastructural building, are not education of their people, are not to deliver any kind of quality of life for the African people. But it is focused on delivering, whether it's malnourishment, if we want to call it that, because the malnourishment is not just our physical bodies, but it is also our mental, and it is also the malnourishment of leadership. And then, you know, it's focused on ensuring that we are not developed, we're underdeveloped. And so much is taken away from us with regards to resource.
I think, Priscilla, what you're describing there is one of the key problems that bedevils Africa today. Our great friend, PLO Lumumba, will call it neo-colonialism.
Absolutely.
And I think let's what he's going to say in his own words.
Interference in Africa started with slavery. When slavery had lost its value, it graduated into colonization. And that is the context in which Berlin must be seen. When the European powers sat in Berlin and divided the continent of Africa into spheres of influence. When colonization had lost its luster through a combination of certain realities and agitation from the continent, we regained our independence. But as John Henry Clark, that great African-American, said, we regained independence by mimicking European governance systems. And he rightly says, no African country will ever succeed on the basis of those systems. After that, the neocolonial project was instituted. And all of us will remember Kwame Nkrumah's book, Neocolonialism, The Last Stage of Imperialism. And he dare says the most dangerous. We are now in a neocolonial stage when the European powers are at their most diabolical, when the Americans are at their most diabolical. And it's not lost on me that they'll be meeting in Hiroshima next week at the G7. And how do they interfere? They interfere militarily. They ensure that you in the military are trained in Sandhurst, are trained in West Point, so they affect your mind. They interfere diplomatically, sometimes through gunboat diplomacy, and that is why you see sometimes your typical European ambassador treats our heads of states in a condescending manner. They interfere through institutions such as the IMF and the World Bank. They interfere by ensuring that our economic infrastructure is beholden to theirs through dollarization. They interfere through education. They interfere by influencing our processes, by lending us advisors who tell us what to do. The neocolonial project is alive and well, and it is at its most dangerous, and we Africans must smell the coffee. If we don't, they are going to continue to interfere. How else do they interfere? Through NGOs, Danida, CEDA, UKAID, USAID. These are Trojan horses that are introduced into our countries for the purpose of influencing our processes. And they infiltrate our institutions. Right now, if you look at the African Development Bank, look at the shareholding. It's Americans, it's Germans, it's Japanese, it's the French. And the Europeans have done their bit. They also interfere through post-colonial institutions, the Commonwealth of Independent Nations. They are not sovereign states, former French-speaking nations. These are the instruments that they interfere through. And how do we then deal with this situation? We Africans must now begin to recognize, and this was recognized as early as 1963, and the chair of the commission is here. They'll be celebrating 60 years in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. And 60 years ago, on the 24th day of May, Kwame Nkrumah warned us. He said, if we are not united, they are going to interfere with us militarily. They are going to interfere with our economy. They are going to interfere with our agriculture. They are going to interfere with our health. Our duty, and I hope that when African heads of states and government meet in Addis next week, it will not be another jamboree at which pro forma speeches are read. I hope it will be an occasion to give meaning to Africa Agenda 2063 I hope it will be an occasion to give meaning to Africa continental free trade area. I hope it will be an occasion to revitalize the Malabo Declaration, the Maputo Declaration, the Yamoussoukro Declaration. In other words, we Africans, as I conclude, we Africans must stop operating in silos. Rwanda alone will not confront them. Burundi alone will not confront them. But if we go through the regional bodies and ultimately the African Union, we may indeed succeed in putting away this bulwark. And remember, it is no longer just Europe. There is a new scramble for Africa. The Chinese are here. The Turks are here. The Qataris are here. All of them are coming back. And the military bases that you see here is telling you that if you don't behave, we are going to use force. Sometimes I wish, and I'm saying this seriously, that we too had a nuclear weapon, because that is what Europe and America understands. The impact of European and American and Russian and Chinese interference is a raw wound. It is not something that is in the past. It is something that is happening as we speak. And therefore, when we speak to it, we are speaking to it to warn ourselves of the reality.
This is Colorful Radio. Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At Dermashack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, Dermadew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, Dermadew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
Powerful words there.
Powerful words. He literally spoke my mind, did he not?
Wow. It makes me sad already. Scratching my head thinking what would be the way out of all this.
Well, you know, I know it sounds bad, and it is, and it has been for a very long time. We cannot deny what we have experienced, but I also think that that change is now starting to occur in Africa. I think that there is an awakening across the continent, and you know, it's spreading like wildfire. And it is beautiful to behold, because this awakening is one that is led by the youth. You know, there's a very strong youth movement, whether we want to look at what happened in Zambia or whether we want to speak about what happened, you know, in Kenya even, or maybe even very recently Nigeria. We are seeing a very strong youth movement. Let's not forget what's currently happening now in, I believe it's Ivory Coast, where the place is literally on fire. And that is because the youth movement are saying, we do not agree with this leader. This is not who we wanted. And we want to see our man installed because it is who we voted for. And so, you know, this is happening right across the continent. It may not be as widely reported in that positive vein as it should, but it is happening. And for me, that's really it's a source of encouragement to see.
Priscilla, when you look into historical changes that came for Africa, for example, the independence from colonial rule, maybe the generation of the time then in every country in Africa, they were very clear who their enemy was. Of course, when they were fighting for freedom for their countries to be independent of colonial rule, we had the collaborators, but collaborators were with the system, the colonizers were far much fewer than those who were united to free their nations from colonial rule. But if you go back to that history right now, and if we were to free our countries today, see, the thing is, we are, there's a lot of interference, as Professor Pierre Lumumba has just illustrated very clearly. You have all these military bases scattered across the continent of Africa, and those are there not just to have some friendly exercises with your local home military units. They're there for the interest of the country that put them there. And therefore, when you look into all this and then you think about this democracy, see, even before any country in Africa has an election, you hear all these voices from the Western hemisphere like almost telling you who to elect. And we are divided because the Western knows we have their allies in the name of your brother on the ground. They make a decision and say, Priscilla, sounds a bit radical. Other things, like, sounds cool, is level-headed. You can be a very good ally. And therefore, whenever they try to install all these tunges in the name of leaders, they are able to harvest all your wealth and resources on the ground with no questions asked. Professor Pierre Lumumba is thinking, yeah, it's a time we need to smell the coffee. What if we smell the coffee? What are we supposed to do? How can it be done? I mean, that's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking.
That's what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think there are some great things that are already happening. First and foremost, unlike back then, the Kwame Nkrumah days, we now live in an age of technology. We live in an age of information. We live in an age of speed. I say speed because I can very quickly, right now, as I speak, as you and I are speaking here now, people are tuning in an instant on another continent, somewhere very far away, somewhere around the world, because of the internet, and they're being informed. And they also have the ability to go online and to check and to read up and to research and to learn more and to hear from other speakers and, you know, intellectuals and so on and so forth. And so it makes it that singular speed that we have, speed of transferring information, speed of learning, speed of technology that technology has provided, has completely changed the ball game. So let me give you a situation that happened recently, you know, in response to the point of they are internal and they will use, you know, our brothers and sisters within to try and we think that they are allies, but they're not. So after the 25th of February presidential election in Nigeria, young Nigerians who all come under the umbrella of obedience, together with the Labour Party candidate and the Labour Party vice presidential candidate, the Obi Dati candidacy. Now, their supporters said they were rigged out of the election because, as far as they're concerned, they won. Not just their supporters, but their principals equally. So this is the allegation on the ground. So then for a period of time, the declared winner was now calling for peace, you know, saying that he wants peace and can they let them talk. And there were talks of sending delegations to go and plead. So there was apparently a plan to send over Stacey Abraham, who we know from Atlanta, the Democratic Party's politician, and would be, or shall I say, governorship candidate. There was talks of her leading a delegation to speak to Nigerians and to speak to the leadership of the Labour Party or the candidates. And young Nigerians on Twitter most especially instantly reached out to her and said, why would you come and do that? Our mandates were stolen. We do not want you. We're not interested in any, you know, you brokering any peace agreement. We are going to court. We're in court. The matter is in court and we're going to see it through. They also made it known to every head of state that congratulated publicly. They went straight and said to them again publicly, how dare you congratulate? This was a stolen mandate. This is unacceptable. Would you accept this had it been your own country? This is not something you will accept for yourself. Why do you think it's okay for us? He is not our president. We do not agree with this, pronouncement. So, and so on and so forth. And this just kept on happening. Whether it was the Ukrainian head of state, whether it was Rishi Sunak, whether it was Joe Biden, it did not matter. So what I'm trying to say here is that, unlike before, that change is coming, because our young people today across the continent are not taking this lying down. I see a day that's coming when Africans will say to the Americans, leave. We don't want you here. We don't need your military bases. And I don't, because in order for Africa to win, they have to be united. In order for Africa to win, they have to stand together. The days of being able to divide Africa, I think those days are long gone. I think the young Africans, as I've just said, are now learning to come together in solidarity, in unity with one another, and understanding and accepting. This is a totally different generation. We can't deny what we've seen in Kenya with their judiciary. We can't deny either, what we've seen in a few of the other African countries. The judiciaries are now stepping up and trying to ensure that those institutions are making the right decisions. That is a decision that, is effectively about the will of the people.
Colorful radio.
I like the way you portray that. I think there's a new chunk of African population is youthful. Mm. And I saw, just to maybe support what you've shared, Not long ago, we saw protests mm-hmm. happening with coordination in four countries in Africa. You remember, yes. It was South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, and Tunisia. So mm-hmm. I think probably it will come a time whereby the African spring, if you were to coin a phrase from the Arab spring,
right,
may happen someday. But
I see it.
Yeah, it's coming. Mm. And you are right. I've seen also in different countries the youth being very much aware of what's happening. So Kenya, of course, they've been like calling out all these current regimes, pinpointing the lies that they were told, and saying, yeah, you abandoned us. You were one of us when you wanted our votes, but now you are in power. You don't remember
us. That's my most favorite one.
Yeah.
Because they fought so hard to have him come in. And immediately he came in and he doesn't appear to be doing what he said he will do. They're not letting up.
No, they're standing up saying, yeah, remember?
Out saying, we want you out.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not something we can say that we've seen in Africa, is it, really? In any of the countries. It's the first time where they have demanded for a leader, got the leader, but then the leader has come in and they've said, oh, no.
Yeah.
You are a plant. You're not who we thought you were. We want you out. And it's just great.
It will change, but we cannot deny the fact that whenever the impact of rigging of elections, which has discouraged democracy the way it should be, because let me tell you something, that's me. If I fought for a candidate And I see this candidate represents what I believe in. They represent everything that I want to see. And I saw them win. And something happened somewhere. Matter are cooked up, and next thing, they lost.
Yeah.
It's pretty sad, because this thing alone is causing a lot of voter apathy in the continent, different countries, because some people are like, I'll never vote again. Why should you vote if voting will never make a difference? Why bother to vote?
It's a huge discouragement. And you can see, not just in the Nigerian situation, but right across, that these young people are, it's affecting them, because you see, they were so hyped up and they were so encouraged by what they saw as potential change in the leader they supported. They saw as a better future. So you can imagine the impact of that. It's almost as though their dreams has been stolen. A lot of them are devastated, because, you know, the courage to continue the fight. And, you know, and often for some that I have come across and I have the opportunity to share with them, it is to say, listen, it is a marathon. It is not a sprint. And there are stages to this, and you have to be prepared for it. If you were really serious about wanting change, you know, you need to stay the course, because it's not going to come just in an instant. It's going to require you not losing the momentum, but to continue the fight, and standing on. So it's very hard for them. I mean, a majority of fights, a few factors to why it is that hard. Age is a part of it, you know. Being able to build the required resilience. And for a lot of them, they need to be amongst those who are driving, or who are driving and the resistance, and ensuring that, no, you know, we're standing the ground and standing the position until such a time. So it isn't easy for them. They need the encouragement. They need the support. And you know, as I often say about the Nigerian movement, it's not just the young people. That was what I found so amazing, was that there are obedience who are also pensioners and parents, and, you know, the long and short of it is that it affects society at large, but it's led by the young people.
Subject today has been democracy in Africa. Is it disappearing? Is it being challenged? Is it there at all? You know, we don't want, you can always share your thoughts to us on Facebook, which goes, if you go to Africa in Focus /Julius, you'll be able to share this with us, your thoughts about this subject. And of course, one day we will play them on live during one of the shows. But I'm hosting, or I'm with Priscilla of New Airport. Now, let's look at it in a different way. Away from the military bases, away from the rigged elections, we also have other challenges. And the big one has been corruption. And this corruption one, Priscilla, is actually the worst of them all. I want to hear what another expert known as Brian Kagoro thinks about that, and then we'll pick it up from there.
I think the most fundamental challenge is not white supremacy. It's black inferiority and the abiding appetite amongst the black elite to function on the basis of white embrace, number one. If we ourselves, even our thieves, are not patriotic, when they steal from Africa, they invest in Europe, they don't believe. The minister said, fix our own government, get a governance system. The people in charge of governance system steal and invest elsewhere as an indictment or an affirmation of their own incompetence and incapacity. But the second bit is that I think both His Excellency Moussa Faki Professor Lumumba and the minister indicated, when you grow a disconnect between the people who give you legitimacy, who are the ultimate resource for the transformation of any nation, when you grow a disconnect between your culture, Amilcar Cabral said, every revolution is first a cultural revolution. A people must believe in themselves. That way they are able to produce both citizens and leaders who are not only patriotic and competent, but that are future-focused and that are regenerative. Unfortunately for us, we have constantly killed three forms of assets. First asset, we kill our babies and our young people by never exposing them. And Rwanda is an exception to this, to what it means to govern and what it means to negotiate, what it means to compete. Number two, you know, in all our countries, anybody, the age group of the people sitting at this table, when you are out of government, you are finished. The state has absolutely no use of the experience, the expertise, and the resources. We are constantly going elsewhere to look for experts that we either have in the diaspora or we have in our countries. The inability to build, retain, use our own local expertise and experience. The third is that we have created everything to be so leader-centric that most of our citizens either wait for God or wait for the leader or wait for foreigners. And the day must come in Africa where Pan-Africanism is Pan-Africanism of the people, no matter how brilliant institutions are, continental or regional. As long as they are not nourished by the ideas of African intellectuals, African artists and activists. But there is hope. Many of you may not see it as hope. The dominance of Afrobeat and Afropop in the world today, sending a message, if that can be used as a vehicle of cultural regeneration, if what the young people have been able to do with tech can be used as a way of reimagining, then what we are talking about as a phenomenon will end. The third is that we can't keep sending all our people. I know that is maybe brain gain for some people. We can't keep sending all our young people to Europe, to America, and elsewhere without creating pathways back. Why? Frantz Fanon said they realized that the empire or the center came and took the best from amongst us and took them to their best institutions. And they emptied them of their own culture and their own sense of being, and they filled them with ideas of how to be good Europeans and Americans. And when they returned, their kith and kin realized that their children had not come back. What had come back were echoes of the empire. You and I, having had the opportunities to serve outside our continent, when we return, we are not trying to establish little Europe's, little France, little America. There must be an authentic way. That's why Rwanda's revolution is not only leadership. It is homegrown solutions, not for Rwanda only, but for the whole world, not just for Africa. We cannot assert ourselves culturally, intellectually, spiritually, as long as we are leprous and dependent.
This is Colorful Radio. Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At Dermashack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, Dermadew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, Dermadew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
Well, there you have it. Even our thieves are not patriotic to Africa.
I mean, what an amazing line. That's an amazing line that is equally a statement of truth, because African politicians, this is true of politicians across the world. They come into office, you know, most of them
perhaps they've been long-term political careers, or they've come from a technocratic background or something, and they come into office and they tend to leave quite wealthy. A lot of them become millionaires and, you know, hard currencies from around the world, whether it's here in the UK. We don't shout about it a great deal here or in Europe or, you know, in the West in general. But it is something that we scream a lot about in Africa. I think it's because of the ratio. The poverty ratio is not, appears quite wide, even though the poverty ratio here is just, it's quite bad. But we don't see that appearance quite as much. And so the leaders of the political, the politicians from Africa will take that wealth and invest it, build hospitals in other countries and not in their respective countries, for instance. Or they will invest it in businesses, you know, right across the globe. They're not patriotic in any way, shape or form. It's unbelievable. You would think that having done so, having become so wealthy through the office through a political office, that they would then use that wealth to create something, perhaps that, even if it's to create employment in their constituents, for instance, it would help. But no, they create that around the world, but not in Africa. Very sad.
There's a time I used to think that there was something special for any politician when they appear on the newspaper, flown from an African country to Germany for medical checkup.
No, that was embarrassment, was it not?
And it took just COVID to communicate powerfully that it comes a time when this airspace gets shut. The planes you used to jump into, they are no longer operational. And if you want to leave and you are sick and you are a politician, you count on your African hospitals. COVID told us big lessons. I wish our politician can step back and think. And I keep giving these examples all the time. The king in England would never be flown to Germany for medical checkup. It's treated locally. President of US, you will be ridiculous reading any headline. President of America has been flown to Japan for medical checkup. You never see that.
Do you even hear that he's been checked?
Well, never. It is to sound strange.
Do you even hear that, yeah? You know, he's in a hospital?
But even now in the UK, like especially London, there's an hospital, I normally call it African Leaders Hospital. Expensive, it is. I'm not going to mention the name, but every other moment, an African president, an African leader, it's been flown there. Why don't we build our own? And again, Brian Kagoro there shared very powerful, issues there. He's talking about you produce experts. Our engineers go to universities to learn. But after learning, you've taken a contract to bring the Chinese to build the rail, and you bring all their manpower and their raw materials from China, and you never see a graduate of our African universities doing the same. So why did they go to uni if governments are not creating opportunities?
This is something that is very, very poor across the continent. Why they agree to those Chinese contracts is what I don't get. We can't call, it's not an investment. It's an invasion. Because if you're investing, the whole point of an investment into a country is to create jobs.
But then if you're investing in a country and then you're coming with everything, including the manpower, that's an invasion. It is not an investment. So I absolutely abhor when I hear that. It angers me. Because as you say, engineers, every year in, year out, we have, you know, students that will come out of the university and they need work experience. They need to be able to put into practice that which they have been taught. And these huge contracts that with the Chinese, it's a huge opportunity to not just get our young people into jobs, but to get them trained. We can't deny, you know, I heard a phrase the other day. What was it? The Chinese, somebody referred to the Chinese as the infrastructural maniacs of the planet.
Yes.
No, because, I mean, I saw this amazing structure of roads and intersections that, I mean, just looking at it is confusing, but it's built in China. And it has like 8 different exits and takes you, you know, and it looks amazing, but it must be scary if you don't know where you're going. Imagine getting lost on that. You'll be looping, you know, you can spend 24 hours trying to find your way, at least so I think, just looking at the video. So they are one of the best to learn from, because we see them, for instance, putting up a building 24 hours, repairing roads in record times, doing those amazing things. They make it look easy. They make it look great. So it would have been, they are perhaps one of the best for our young people to learn from and then continue that knowledge within the African space. But all too often, they are left to have to, you know, leave the country. So we see this with our doctors, we see this with our lawyers, we see this with nurses, we see it right across the board, because we're not creating in Nigeria, for instance, you know, a lot of them are well-meaning, but they lack the understanding of how to marry up that project with the people. So they use the term project considerably. And they put a project up, and all too often that project is just standing there because the framework or the infrastructure to ensure that that project generates an income or generates employment or generates support services is not there. And so they build all of these things that literally just stand there idle. And, you know, because there's a general lack of continuity. Government after government comes in and puts up new things, and you know, you find these structures literally just standing dead, which is quite, it's a huge waste on the continent as well. So they really need to reassess those contracts that are being signed, and this is where the late Magufuli of Tanzania is, you know, will be so missed, because we all learned that when he came into office back in, what, 2017, I think it was, he quite literally took all of these contracts, looked at them, and then decided that these contracts do not benefit the people of Tanzania. And so he renegotiated the contracts and just basically said, well, if you don't agree, you can leave. And he was renowned for turning things around, rebuilding Tanzania without running out, for instance, for loans from the West or, you know, this, you know, we there's this thing that we do a lot of, we have these investment conferences all the time, all over the place, where huge sums of money are expended. And there's never quite a measure of the investment and if money was well spent, you know?
Very, very true. Magufuli will be really missed. He transformed Tanzania, his country, in a big way. The other problem we have an international system that is very paternalistic, looks down on Africa, speaks to Africa like a small child.
Yeah.
And this was actually not illustrated any better. Every other moment you hear Russia, African summit, China, Africa summit, US, Africa summit, UK, Africa summit. You hear all these things. We thought a lot gets done in those summits because heads of state of governments of Africa attend to these things. But Priscilla, what we were shown during the Queen's burial, the way heads of states from Africa were lumped up, put together in a coach, that sent shockwaves to people who know that act, what it means. Supposing something was to happen to that coach, Africa would lose all the presidents?
Yes.
What a shame. What a shame. That's not the way to do. I respect the president of Ethiopia. She refused. She said, I'm going to be using my embassy car.
That's right.
I'm not jumping on that bus. I'm not boarding.
No.
And I loved that. But something something else we learned from President Ruto. He managed to tell us what happens in these summits. So yes. Let's hear that.
So what am I saying? For example, let me give you another example. We have been to US Africa. We have been to some other engagement with other countries. Now we have been invited for a Russia Africa summit. We have made a decision very respectfully as heads of state in Africa that any engagement with other partners must be an engagement of equals. And for it to be meaningful, if we are going to meet the president of a country, we have organized ourselves that the Troika is going to represent Africa. The chair, the current chair, the past chair, the chair that is coming, and the heads of our regional economic commissions, about 6-7 people. But what happens continuously when others want to engage with us, they don't want to deal with the Troika. They want to invite 50 heads of state. So we go to a meeting, just explain to me what kind of outcome you expect where 50 heads of state are sitting. Everybody is asked for speak to 1.5 minutes. You speak to one, for 1.5 minutes. What kind of engagement are you going to get? You're going to get nothing. Right? The best that you get is photographs.
Priscilla, we have enough photographs of our heads of states on the ground in every country in Africa, don't we?
Oh, we sure do. We sure do. Yes, you know,
your take quickly.
Absolutely right. And I think he went on to say in that speech that if, you know, you could just have, as he made mention there, the rep, it also puts into practice the Africa Free Trade Agreement. Because truly, as he said, inviting 50 heads of states, what you're saying is you don't respect that agreement because they're supposed to be working together. So if you go outside of that and you're speaking to them individually, you can't do that with the EU, can you?
No.
You're not allowed.
You have to go through their system.
You have to go through their system. So why do they always try to override the system in Africa? Utter disregard, total, you know, disrespect. It's just wrong. And we're in an age now, you know, where I think African leaders need to understand that the African people themselves are very wide awake and that the African people will support and stand with them should they choose to take a stand to say, no, we do not accept, we're not doing it this way.
And I think it's also the onus is also on leadership to educate the masses about what it means. Because a lot of these things has happened and gone on for as long as it has, you know, seemingly generation after generation, leader turnover after leader turnover, simply because I think that there's been quite a lack of education, understanding of what democracy is all about and what the tenets of democracy is as well, and what that means to an individual within a country and a setting. And I think that, you know, if that understanding was clear to the masses considerably, I think we would have a different Africa. But because that has been lacking, we've been having leadership that has been working in silos, whether silo within their country or silo within Africa at large. And thus you see that they go to these things, they're invited and they're all giddy with excitement and joy to go.
And they get nothing out of it, and they know.
And they get nothing, they're getting out of nothing. It, except for the ESTA codes that they collect from their own country to travel out.
That's a shame.
And it's a real shame. It's really not of a real benefit. So why do it?
But then exactly. They would have known that a long time ago and decided there's nothing in this for us.
And, well, they couldn't do it because I think a lot of them were probably fearful of what may have happened to them. We're also aware of, you know, some leaders who don't toe the line. We've mentioned the late John Magufuli, for instance. If you don't toe the line, something's waiting for you at the end of the barrel. And I think that there are some who are quite fearful of that. Again, if you had the buy-in of the masses, of your people, it would be very difficult to just take you out like that, I think.
But when you have the people on your side, that's what matters most. Mm. And you have to stand and fight for your people. Otherwise, what's the point of it all?
Absolutely.
Yes. Priscilla, it's been wonderful hosting you. Wow, democracy in Africa. So many issues going on.
It's still alive, Julius. It's still alive. And we are going to have democracy very soon.
Yeah, we have to keep the candle of hope. Optimism burning. We cannot say, should never say die. Should never say die. So with that few remarks, I think we have come to the end of the show. But our listeners, don't go away. Stay tuned for more programs coming to you from Colorful Radio. Priscilla, always a pleasure.